Diane. Great to be back with you. On My Mind This Week, it's 2018, but it feels a lot like the year 2000. The Senate race in Florida is so close, it's triggered a manual recount, recalling the days of hanging chads in Bush v. Gore. As election officials in Florida and other states where results from last week's midterms were incredibly close have worked to count votes, President Trump has launched unsubstantiated claims of voter fraud. My guest this week, election law professor Rick Hassan, says the president's partisan attacks on the voting process, combined with continued issues with how elections are run, make for a very troubling combination. Rick Hassan is professor of law and political science at the University of California Irvine School of Law. I spoke with him from his office Friday morning. Professor Hassan, thanks for joining us again.
Oh, it's great to be with you.
The midterms have turned out to be a blue wave after all, but you say that regardless of the results, what's happening in Florida and in Georgia and elsewhere should give us all the chills. Tell us why.
Well, I think that we saw a pretty volatile mix of overheated election rhetoric coming from the president and the governor of Florida on down, continued problems with election machinery, continued problems with pockets of election administrator incompetence, and bad ballot design, which was probably responsible for the election of George W. Bush in 2000, now playing a role and probably responsible or possibly responsible for changing election results in the U.S. Senate race. So 18 years after Bush versus Gore, we're still in pretty bad shape when it comes to litigating close elections, at least in some places in the country.
You know, I have no understanding of why they can't get these ballots right after all these years. What's holding them back? Is there some objection to redesigning so that they seem more accurate?
Well, I think that in most places, ballots have gotten better. There are best practices and in the context of ballot design, and most election administrators are trying to do a good job on a tight budget. Often they're constrained in how they can design their ballot to match the voting machinery, right? So they have to design a ballot that could be read by a machine or somehow created in a way that people will be able to see it. Even with electronic voting machines, we saw in Texas this time, you think that would be clear, but the instructions were not clear, and some people who thought they were voting for one candidate for Senate in that high-profile Cruz-O'Rourke race ended up voting for another. So it requires work, and it requires testing. Not every place has the resources. Not every place has the competence. And so we still end up with these stories each election cycle of problems with ballot design.
Some people have continued to wonder whether the manufacturer of these voting machines may have somehow deliberately bollocked them. What is your thinking?
Well, I don't think we've seen evidence of that. There's a lot of conspiracy theories floating around. I used to think that all the conspiracy theories should be dismissed out of hand. I would say these days there really is reason to be concerned, if not about the companies that are making the machines doing something wrong, but about them being potentially subject to manipulation through hacking by foreign or domestic sources. And so I think that we do need to make sure that there are procedures in place to check the accuracy. One of the most important things that can be done, and many jurisdictions are now doing this, is a post-election audit. So you get your results, they're officially announced, and then you go back and you do some kind of random check to make sure that the results that you reported pretty much match up with what would come if you looked back afterwards and make sure that things were correct. We also see Los Angeles County, which is the largest election jurisdiction in the United States, they decided that rather than just buy machines outright, they designed their own machines. And they will have the ability to get information about how the machines work that people who buy machines privately do not get. That process, though, even that has proved controversial because the company that's actually manufacturing the machines is a subsidiary of a company that is based out of the country, and so there are concerns about that as well.
Huh.
So I think we need vigilance and we need testing, post-election testing, to make sure that things are the way that they are reported on when the elections are closed out.
So you're arguing that we're facing a dangerous new phase in the voting wars, especially in light of the 2020 presidential election.
Right. So I think what's different here is the Trump factor. So we've had disputes over close elections before. What we haven't had before is someone at the head of the party making completely unsubstantiated claims that there is vote fraud on a major basis, that elections are being stolen. At one point, the president tweeted that he thought that election night results were the ones that should be followed. That, of course, is a ridiculous statement to make because in large jurisdictions, it takes days to go through the ballots, especially ballots coming in that are vote-by-mail ballots where you have to check signatures, that you have to do things to prevent fraud. And if you stopped counting on election night, you'd be disenfranchising, among other people, many military voters whose ballots come in the days after Election Day when they mail them in time, but there's a time period where it takes. You know, we need to do it right, and I know that there's a lot of impatience about getting election results, but it does take time. But this overheated rhetoric suggests to me that if you imagine a scenario where the election comes down to Florida again and Trump is narrowly ahead on Election Day, and then there's continuing counting that reverses the results, that Trump would claim that it's somehow illegitimate and really could provoke a constitutional crisis if he claims that he is the winner of the election. And so it really is, as I said, a kind of volatile mix of bad rhetoric combined with some bad machinery and, which we haven't spoken about yet, some incompetent election administration, as we saw in Broward County, Florida, especially this time.
What about those people who do mail-in ballots early? Are they any better off than those people who go to the polls on voting day?
Each jurisdiction has their own rules as to how they process ballots. One of the reasons people like to vote by mail is because it's much more convenient. They can do it in the privacy of their home. But it does raise some risks of a ballot not being counted. So, for example, one of the issues that's really been prominent this time through is signature matching. So you sign up to vote by mail. They've got your signature on file. Years later, you turn in a ballot, and maybe they're going to compare your signature to the DMV record, and your signature has changed.
Of course.
And so if you have non-professionals judging lack of signatures, you could have a ballot tossed. And where the conflict really comes in is about the possibility of curing the problem. So in some places, if your ballot is going to be rejected because it has an invalid signature match, you are then given an opportunity to prove your identity and say, no, that's really me. My signature's changed. In other places, you don't have that opportunity. Or you're not notified that your ballot has been tossed. And there have been some lawsuits now claiming that that's unconstitutional. I certainly think it's very bad policy to not give people the chance to be able to cure. And so I think before you decide to vote by mail, you're going to have to, if it's a place where you can vote by mail or vote in person, you should look into those rules and see what those rules are. Voting in person, you may end up having to give up 2 or 3 hours, depending on what the lines look like. But, you know, if you're concerned about your vote being counted, that may be a better way to go.
So back in 2000, after the Bush v. Gore issue, there was a lot of federal money put into updating voting systems. Yet in 2012, you wrote your book, The Voting Wars. So has anything changed substantially, especially in regard to those voting machines?
Certainly things changed for the better initially. We got rid of those punch card machines. You may remember the hanging Chad.
I sure do.
So those punch card machines are gone. They're not used anywhere in the country. And we did see the country adopt, in many places, new voting machines. The problem is that not everything that was adopted worked well. And so Florida, for example, adopted some electronic voting machines. And then there was a problem in a congressional race in 2006. And so so far decided they're going to get rid of those electronic machines. More generally, even now, the machines have reached the end of their useful life in a lot of places. They have to buy new machinery. Congress has now, in the last year, granted some new funds to buy machines. Whether it'll be enough, we'll have to see, because some have asked for more funds. But we saw one of the things that came out in this election was it's not just the machines on which people cast votes, but it's also the machines that count the ballots. Because, you know, when you're dealing with hundreds of thousands of ballots in a jurisdiction, it takes a many races, takes a very long time. In Palm Beach County, Florida, we saw the machines broke down, the ones that count the ballots, to the point that Palm Beach County was not able to complete a recount of the votes in three close races as mandated by state law. And in the end, unless there's a court order otherwise, the vote totals that came in on election day are the ones that would have to stand because they couldn't get their machines to do the recount in time. I mean, it really just shows you how dependent we are on these machines and how the rules have to be written to take into account what the capabilities are of election administrators to deal with these kinds of problems.
Now, I gather in Florida there is going to be a recount, a hand recount. What does that really mean?
Well, it's a limited hand recount. So the way that Florida law works is that if the election is close enough, very close, then there is a machine recount. They run the ballots through the machines again.
Right.
If that doesn't change the results and they're close enough, even closer, I think it's 0.25% difference.
Right.
If you're at that level, then there is a hand recount of the undervotes and the overvotes, meaning So let's take the U.S. Senate race, which is the most prominent of the recounts going on now. So if someone's ballot was recorded as a vote for Nelson or a vote for Scott or for another candidate, then that ballot is counted and that's the end. But if a ballot is rejected either because there's no vote recorded for Senate or more than one vote, then those are looked at by hand. And so just before we got on the line here for us to record this, I saw a report out of Broward County. Broward County is where there were 24,000 fewer votes in the Senate race than in the governor's race. And the big question was this because of the poor ballot design? That race was sort of at the bottom in the corner, and it came after an uncontested race, and people might have missed it. Or was it the machinery that was somehow misprogrammed that counts the ballots that didn't count this? And so Broward has just finished its count, and there were virtually no additional votes picked up for either candidate, meaning that the problem was not that the machines were miscounting, but probably ballot design, and people just skipped the race because they didn't see it. And so, you know, whether it would have changed the outcome of the election if people would have seen it, you know, I don't know if there would have been enough. Right now, Nelson was behind by 12,000, and the way things were breaking, not necessarily enough to make a difference in the margin in that county. But given this new development, it seems very unlikely that the statewide count of the undervotes or overvotes is going to change things enough, even combined with some of the lawsuits that Nelson has filed to try to get more ballots counted to ultimately change the result in that election.
So we're down to Florida again, plus Georgia, which we'll get to. What is it about Florida?
So I don't think Florida is unique, but I do think that they are unusual in the sense that it's this combination of partisan election administration, some incompetence in some of the largest counties, which are Democratic counties. And so Brenda Snipes, who is the election administrator in Broward County, has made a series of mistakes for years.
Such as?
In one election, she destroyed ballots after the election when state law required her to keep them. There were problems with mixing up provisional ballots, which have to be checked before they're counted, with regular ballots. In this election, Governor Scott, who's the Republican Senate candidate, wants to know how many ballots were left to be counted after Election Day, as they were figuring out their strategy going forward. And she wouldn't reveal how many ballots were left, probably because there was a lack of competence to know how many ballots. He had to go to court to get a court order to find out how many ballots were left to be counted. I mean, this is not how it is. Just to compare, in Orange County, California, where we've had a number of close congressional races that have been nationally watched, there's a website, and you can see every day exactly how many ballots are left, how many ballots were counted, what the totals are. So it's just kind of a series of things. Now, Snipes was initially appointed by Jeb Bush, Republican governor, to that position. But then, since then, she's been up for election, and she has been consistently reelected despite the fact that she's had these horrible problems. Because, you know, a lot of places, people vote the party line, and Broward's a Democratic county, and people go in, they care about the top races. They don't really pay attention to, you know, who's the election administrator, and they'll vote for the Democrat. But she's just been absolutely terrible. So you've got the, you know, a very closely divided electorate, really a 50-50 swing state, if there ever was one. You've got partisan election administration. You still have, in some places, inadequate resources, poor ballot design, old machinery. Florida needs to devote more effort and more resources to fixing the system. But you also have, Florida made a change that actually made things even more partisan. So you may remember in 2000, Catherine Harris, she was the elected Republican Secretary of State.
Right.
So, you know, she made a number of controversial decisions that benefited the Republican Party over how the presidential recount should be conducted. And I should point out that Bob Butterworth, who was the Attorney General for the state of Florida, was a Democrat. He issued some contrary decisions about how things should be done, and he didn't even have jurisdiction over this area. So, you know, partisanship on both sides. After the 2000 election, Florida changed the Secretary of State's office from being an elected office on a partisan election to being someone appointed by the governor. And that makes it even more partisan because that person is basically under the sole control of an elected official. And, you know, that seems to me to be the exact wrong way to go on these things.
And in addition, President Trump, Governor Rick Scott, and Marco Rubio seem determined to undermine the public's faith in the voting systems.
Yes, and I think this is really troubling development, and it shows why we're really in some trouble, because this is so obvious that you shouldn't even need to say it, but a democracy depends on the losers being willing to accept the results of an election as legitimate. And when you start making comments with no evidence whatsoever of fraud, it really does undermine the public's faith. You know, if this starts getting circulated and people don't believe that the election was actually won in a fair and square way, then that's a problem. Now, I expect that because Scott is going to be declared the winner in the next few days, that Trump and Rubio and Scott will shut up about the election being stolen, that it's fraud. But I think the damage is done, and I worry, as I wrote in a recent Slate piece, this is sort of a dry run for 2020 when Trump will be up for election and these kinds of things are possible.
Now a quick break. When I return, more of my conversation with Rick Hassan.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
And we're back. Here's the rest of my conversation with Rick Hassan. So how is what's going on in Florida compared to what's happening in Georgia?
So Georgia, you have, I think, a different kind of set of problems. Some of the things are similar. The big problem there is that the now former Secretary of State, Brian Kemp, who was the gubernatorial candidate, who is ahead of Stacey Abrams in the governor's race, I think he made a series of both partisan and incompetent decisions in how he has run his election system. One example is the security of the voter registration database. As we know, Russian government tried to hack into a number of election systems. This was back in 2016. There are all kinds of measures now to provide better security for these systems. Kemp, I think, was the only state election official to refuse help from the Department of Homeland Security to try to deal with his problems. And the state essentially outsourced its management of this voter registration database to a university. There were multiple vulnerabilities found in how the database was done to the point where people could potentially go in and delete or change voter registration information. He's not taken enough steps to fix it, so much so that he's been sued, and a federal court said, well, it's too late to fix things for 2018, but they better be fixed for 2020. And then what I think is probably the worst example of partisanship I can think of, and I'm including in the modern era, and I'm including Florida 2000. On the weekend just before the election this time around, someone wrote to the Democratic Party's election protection team and said, there's still a vulnerability in how the voter registration database is set up, and it's a real problem. And Democratic Party officials forwarded that email to election officials to tell them about this vulnerability. And immediately, Brian Kemp, who was still the Secretary of State at that time, he had not yet resigned, he had posted on the web page of the Secretary of State's office, the official web page, the one you go to find out what the polling hours are, what your polling place is, all the election information, a press release that accused the Democratic Party of engaging in cyber hacking. Wow. And there it sat through Election Day. And it stayed up there even when it was confirmed that all the Democratic Party was doing was passing on a vulnerability that someone else had come up with and that they were trying to do the right thing. And so this, in connection with a number of decisions that Kemp made about provisional ballots, about counting of ballots, about signature mismatches, has led Democrats to believe that the election was not fairly conducted. And now there's talk about them calling for a revote. I don't think that's going to happen. I think the Democrats are going to see this election as illegitimate. I think that some of the language that they're using is over the top about the election being stolen, but I do think that it was administered in an unfair way to give an advantage to Kemp.
So at this point in our history, what do you think are the most common misperceptions that we as voters have about the entire voting process?
Well, I think people think that it's a lot simpler than it is. I think that's the number one misperception. You know, why can't we get this right? You know, why can't we do this? And it is an extremely complex endeavor when you think about a national election being conducted in something like 10,000 different electoral jurisdictions. We don't have a national set of rules. We don't have uniform equipment. We have places with election administrators who have different levels of training, different levels of resources. You have partisans involved in the process, and everything is under a microscope. You know, our election system in most places works reasonably well, but when you're talking about an extremely close election, like we're seeing in Florida, and you're talking about places where there have been problems, you look under the hood, you see it is a complex process. As with anything else, the amount of effort that's put in doesn't always lead to perfection. And so if you want perfection, you're going to have to put in a lot more resources, and you're going to have to change some of the rules to make sure that things are being done in a fair way.
Now, explain why it is that votes counted after an election night often skew toward Democrats. Why is that?
Well, there are a few reasons. First, if you look at the demographics of people who are voting Republican versus voting Democrat, you'll see that Republican voters, on average, tend to be whiter, older, and living in the same place for a longer period of time. So what does that mean? That means that they tend to vote earlier, which means their ballots are going to come in first. Or they're going to vote on election day, and those totals are generally reported before the absentee total. So one thing is that Republicans generally tend to vote earlier. Democrats tend to vote later. And Democrats have really moved, in California, for example, really pushed hard for use of vote by mail, and those ballots are counted later. And so we saw in the close congressional races in Orange County, California, we saw a number of Republican congressional candidates such as Dana Rohrabacher or Mimi Walters ahead on election day. And then as the votes came in, they shifted to favor the Democratic opponents of these candidates. So that's one thing. The other thing is, if you are a new voter, if you have moved recently, if you're poor, if you're a minority voter, those voters tend to be more likely to cast provisional ballots. Provisional ballots are handled at the end, so that's a ballot where there might be a question about whether the person is eligible to vote. Maybe the person is in a state where they've registered on Election Day, as is allowed in some places, and they have to verify that the person is eligible to vote. And so that second basket of votes, the ones that have to be given extra time to check, those tend to be disproportionately Democratic. And that's why you see what Professor Ned Foley of Ohio State has called the big blue shift, as ballots shift in the Democratic direction. And that means now that we're going to see more elections where Republicans are ahead on Election Day and then ultimately are not the ultimate winner as all of the votes are counted.
But not in Florida and not in Georgia for this election, you think?
Well, it was not close enough in those particular races, but we've seen it in many other races when it's been close enough.
Which, if any, of the problems you've talked about do you expect could be or might be fixed before the 2020 election?
Certainly, there are going to be some jurisdictions that shift to new voting equipment. Los Angeles, as I mentioned, is going to shift to new voting equipment, and that is something that is, I think, a very good thing in places where the machinery is old. I hope that after this election, there'll be more resources put into that. I think that there's going to be renewed focus on ballot design. There is a period of time in places before an election for the ballot to be produced and for people to comment on it in case there's a problem. And so I think people need to pay extra attention to that. But in terms of moving away from the model of, you know, localized elections and partisan elections and the overheated rhetoric of the president who has set the tone for a number of Republicans, I don't think any of that is going to change, unfortunately, going into the upcoming 2020 election season.
Well, Professor Hessen, I want to thank you so much for being with us and giving us a very deep dive into these various congressional and senatorial voting races. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
And that's all for this week. I'd love to hear what's on your mind. Connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. Send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org, or leave us a voicemail. The number is 202-854-8851. And go to our website, dianereem.org. Our theme music was composed by Cliff Harden, comes to us courtesy of the Capitol Soundtrack Project here at WAMU. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Our engineers this week are Natalie Urev-Lipker and Cliff Gallagher. Thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.